And welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here at CBSSports.com. It's Greg Sanluk, and I'm joined by Wes Goldstein, Aaron Brown. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Okay.
All right. Preseason is over. Our preview packages are over, and now we can get back down to talking about hockey on the ice. And this weekend we had all 30 teams in action, 15 games. Just want to get your thoughts on what you think of that Super Saturday mentality and if that's something that we should see. I know that there's supposedly one more this year, but I want to see if this is something that we think the NHL should do more often.
That's a good gimmick. The only thing is they had no games on Sunday, so.
Yeah, but come on, admit it. Everyone was watching football on Sunday.
Yeah, but I'm not used to that. I'm used to turning on and finding a hockey game somewhere, so.
Wow. You could have signed online and maybe found like a Quebec Major Junior League game.
Yes. I'll remember that next time this happens.
All right, so let's look at some of the results that happened on over the first few days of the season. I know it's early, and we were talking about it before the show, but seeing teams like Vancouver and Detroit at 0-2, while St. Louis and Colorado 2-0, I know we said that it's not maybe as much a stretch for St. Louis, but Colorado, a team that most people pick to finish outside the playoffs, getting off to a good start. Again, it's early, but give me your thoughts on these four teams.
As far as Colorado goes, that first game, I consider a wash. It was Joe Sakic night. If they didn't go out there and win, that would be pretty embarrassing. But, you know, give them credit for that second game there. It is very early. I think that maybe there's a mentality in the locker room that, hey, nobody is picking us to do anything, so let's prove some people wrong. But, you know, how that holds up over the course of an entire season is going to be the real question. And
they rode the emotion the first night for sure, which is a good thing. And you know, they need to do that because let's face it, they're struggling in terms of their attendance the last couple of years. They have a team that's probably not playoff bound, and a lot of skeptical fans there. They're going to get a lot of people in the building for Sakic, so you know, the idea to ride that and to win the first game is you know, obviously a good thing for the organization. I think San Jose basically kind of sleepwalk through that first game because they were looking ahead to Anaheim, so they didn't really show up. But, you know, getting Colorado credit for winning that one and winning against Vancouver, two wins at home to start the season, that's, you know, at least it's some encouragement to offer their fans. I think that's a good thing.
And you never know. If something does come out of Colorado this year, if they do turn around, who knows what those two games could mean to them down the road. I mean, it's never too early to start saying where did the games matter.
I agree with you. It's probably never too early for some people to start panicking after a couple of losses
sure.
either.
Yeah. Right.
But, yeah, you know, I personally think this is as close as Colorado gets to the lead.
Well, I'm not saying they're going to win the division or anything. I'm just saying that if they have a run like, say, L.A. did last year or, you know, or even St. Louis, I mean, you never know where – you know, 2 points, four
and
points.
Speaking
can make
of LA,
a difference.
I thought they came up with a stinker. This is a team that everybody thinks is going places this year. Young
right,
team.
On the way up.
Yeah,
right, sure.
You know, and boy, and they come up. There's something about teams that, you know, have home openers and really fall flat. The Kings did it against Phoenix in their game Saturday night. Boston did it last Thursday against Washington. They looked awful. You know, I think you have to come up with better effort in your home opener. And, you know, Anaheim, same thing. I don't think they were there against San Jose a Saturday night. So
yeah, I'd love to see what the records are for teams playing in any kind of a celebratory match, you know, where there's some kind of ceremony or something beforehand. Because I think it often leads to great first periods, and then it's so hard to maintain that momentum and adrenaline from whatever the ceremony was, you know, throughout the course of the game. Whereas, you know, the opposing team, which is generally always going to be an away team in these circumstances, has to, you know, they just kind of keep plodding away period after period, trying to play a good road game, you know, as they say. And I'm not sure that it's sometimes easier for them to come away with points than it is for the team that, you know, is having the ceremony.
I think it would be easier if they could somehow break that down and see how long the ceremonies were. Because, you know,
some
ceremonies take a lot longer. And I've seen that, I think when the Rangers did this, I'm thinking back to when Messier's retirement ceremony went on. It went on like forever.
Exactly.
And the thing is, it's not only for the home team, but it's also for the visiting team. You're sitting there and you're waiting and you're waiting. Your whole rhythm about your pregame preparation is a certain way, and you're ready to start a game at 7 or 7:30, and let's say it's starting at 8:30 or 8:35, it completely throws you out of whack. So I think it's interesting to see how the impact is, depending how, you know, in relation to the length of the ceremony.
But they don't have the pressure of performing at that point. The away team.
I think when you get everyone,
they're not like, okay, you know, here's again your example, Mark Messier, the beloved captain, right, of this organization. Now you're going to go out there and lose or play poorly on a night that's honoring him, whereas the away team, they have no connection to, unless they're playing Edmonton or by some small chance Vancouver, you know, that there's the pressure to perform is just like it is on any other night. Yes, they still have to wait, but they don't have that anxiety, if you will.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. You get the crowd hyped up and, you know, everyone's into it.
As I'm saying, those first periods, especially those first couple of shifts, guys, you know, everybody's flying all over the ice, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, I'm exhausted. You know, I just spent through two periods of energy in 5 minutes.
It's a matter of pacing, I think.
I think the crowd gets worn out too.
Without question.
Hour, you know, like by the time the game starts, okay, just give me a beer. And,
I mean, how many tissues can you throw down to Messier when you're talking? You know, and that takes a lot of energy and effort too.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
All right, so let's take a look at some top performers
back to
so
the
far.
Ice.
Yeah, let's get back to the ice.
From the rafters to the ice.
Looking at some of the top performances, you know, Ovechkin. It's not a surprise, but, you know, at some point in time you think, like, all right, you know, maybe he'd get a goal in the first game, you know, the first couple games they play. But, you know, he comes out and, you know, everyone's joking he's on, you know, on pace to, you know, destroy Gretzky's records
well,
and everything.
He is, yeah.
Yes, he is. But that's, you know, that's like the guy that's going to hit 162 home runs because he, you know, hit a home run on opening day.
But Gretzky did it twice.
You know, but, I mean, the guy just doesn't stop.
Well, you know, the thing, and I think, really, you have to look at this in a bigger, in a kind of more broad context, because Washington looked really scary in their first two games.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the way they ran through Boston in the first game, and that was a statement game. This is, you're starting the season on the road, on national TV for some people, and you have a game where, you know, they're still, and to me it looked like they were, like, shot out of a cannon in that night. You know, like, how much they were kind of, like, seething all summer. They got to Game 7 against Pittsburgh. They could have won that game.
Sure.
I keep going back to this. Had Ovechkin scored in the breakaway early when it was 0-0, it's a different game.
Different game.
But they got blown out. That was it. They watched Pittsburgh raise the Stanley Cup. It's a rivalry. It's a bitter thing. It's like all summer, it's my turn. I'm going to do it. And the way they came out as a team, and they really – Boston is a very good team. And they just really destroyed them at home in Boston in the first game. I think that was a real statement. They played – you know, swarming offense. Their defense was surprisingly good. They blocked a lot of shots.
Right.
And then they come back in Toronto, and again, they run Toronto out of the rink. Then, you know, I think they lapsed a little bit at the end to let the Maple Leafs get a couple of goals and make it at least look respectable on the scoreboard. But you're looking at this team, and Ovechkin, again, he is the driving force, and the way he's playing right now, it's like, this is going to be our time, and we're going to go through it. And, you know, I mean, they were really, really impressed. I think that's one of the stories of the first couple of days, just how good they actually were.
Right, yeah, and I don't want to rephrase, but just point out the fact that, yes, this is the entire Capitals team playing very, very good hockey, not just Ovechkin, who certainly has come out with great performances in the first two games, but they're getting help and performances from the entire team.
Semin, Backstrom, Brendan Morrison looks like a very good addition.
He's kind of like halving everything that Ovechkin's doing, you know, just doing his part for sure.
Yeah, Brooks Lake, you know, I mean, really, they're playing very, very well. It's a very good team. There's no question about it. There's a reason they're very excited in Washington. It's legitimate.
And I think it speaks to the type of player Ovechkin is. And I think that he's very much a player that says, get on my back, I'll carry you. And it just, it amps everybody else up. It, to some degree, not to shift sports here, kind of reminds me of the Bulls when they were in their heyday. You know, Michael Jordan was the key guy, but everyone around him was better because of him. And I think that's exactly what you see in Washington. And, you know, yeah, the defense giving up, what was it, 4 goals against Toronto. That's not something.
But again, that was I think they were up 6-1.
I was just going to say that it's going to be. I think we might see a lot of those games where they score so many goals
right.
that it's not going to matter what you know the other team is.
I agree. I think you have to look
you
at
know,
if,
putting
if you,
up there.
If you kind of want to look at where their defense is, I think the Boston game. I mean, again, it's only a couple of games in, mm-hmm. but of the two games, that's more telling of what they can do
yeah.
and maybe of the lessons they learned about how important it is. They've got to play defense because this team, doesn't matter how much firepower they have in this league and wide open or whatever you want to say about the NHL now, you are not going to win in the playoffs unless you play good defense.
Yes.
Right? And that's
very
critical.
True.
So.
And speaking of good defense, I want to shift gears over to Philadelphia, who I think is also playing some excellent hockey, winning their first two games, 7-4, 2 against. This seems like a you know another team. They did excellent job in the offseason. They filled needs more than anything else. I mean, yes, they acquired obviously a big name player in Pronger, but you know what? It was also a need filling. And I just think that they're playing some excellent hockey, and I think they're going to be a very difficult team to play night in, night out.
No kidding. And mm-hmm. I think you know part of the story. Obviously, Pronger is a major part of the story because it makes a big difference in that blue line. But Emery has looked very good. Ray Emery mm-hmm. in goal. Couple of games.
Yep.
Emery's a good goalie, and I think the thing is, the one thing that struck me about the first, certainly all the games on Saturday, and I saw a couple times in the first couple of nights as well, you're seeing a lot of goalie crashing already.
Yeah.
You know, the forwards are getting to, you know, this. Everybody talks about getting to the net. Well, it seems like the message is finally getting drilled into a lot of players, but you don't see too many players getting to the net on Emery because mm-hmm. you have Pronger there. And I think Pronger's keeping people honest with Coburn as well. They're a physical defense now, much more so than before. And I think giving Emery the chance to see the puck, and when he sees the puck, he's a good goalie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's, yeah, Philadelphia actually is a very impressive team right now.
Let's shoot out to the West and go over Detroit, which we mentioned earlier. Again, only 2 games in, and I'd have to think that they're not a team that's in panic mode. But certainly, you know, you'd like to get off to a good start, and traditionally, you know, they always do. So what do you think is going on in Detroit?
I think they lost a couple of games.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Simple as that, right?
I think so. Look, I mean, you know, this is a different experience. Even though there are a lot of European players and everything, the idea of playing National Hockey League games away from home, I mean, you know, you're leaving home. You're not settled the same ways. It's mm-hmm. it's only a couple-game road trip, but it's a completely different experience. The ice surfaces are a little different.
I think there were problems with the ice, too, because a couple times I was watching the Detroit games, they were stopping the play. They were taking chunks of ice.
Yeah, well,
you know, I mean, little things like that could...
I didn't see both games. I didn't see the first game because it was on Versus.
No, I did.
I'm a direct TV subscriber, folks,
let's start the count now. As opposed to our Sean Avery watch.
Oh, right? Wait, Sean Avery.
So there you go. He's made it into this week's podcast.
I think we need to get
but,
an interview with
I
him
think
this
a,
year.
A versus DirecTV watch also needs to be put in place.
A resolution-o-meter or something until when they come
right.
to some they have to come to
exactly.
some sort of agreement. But be that as it may, I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, the ice surface might have it. They might have had some problems with the ice. One of the players was saying, like, the surface seemed a little smaller, the angles and the edges
mm-hmm.
on the
board.
So
yeah.
A lot of different things. Again, you lose 2 games to a division rival. That's not a great start. But,
right.
you know, again, this is a veteran team. It's not a panic. It's not given to panic by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I think, look, it's going to be easy for people to look at them and say, well, what's, you know, Detroit, they lost some key players. What's going to happen with them? You can start worrying about them. Watching Jimmy Howard play goal, I did see that game on the NHL Network. He didn't look all that impressive. So, and that's one of the concerns.
And that's
they
always
have.
Been a question for
right,
them when it was time for him to come up. Was he going to be a guy?
Well, the thing is, they don't have Conklin as a backup this year. You know,
yeah,
so Osgood.
Yeah.
You know, again, Osgood is still like he's 37, 38 mm-hmm. years old. So they're not looking at him at playing 70 games. They're looking at him at 50, probably the outside.
Yeah.
So they do need something from a guy like Howard. And you know, the first game that he played. Was not confidence building, certainly.
Yeah.
But give St. Louis credit. Their power play was really good in both games. Power play was really good last year at the beginning mm-hmm. of season 2, if
right.
I recall.
Right.
So, you know, they get off to fast starts and they have a good team. Having Korea back in the lineup and Johnson back in the lineup, mm-hmm. I think makes a difference for them.
Yeah, and I think with those games over in Sweden, that had to have been a huge, huge distraction
sure.
for, you know, good, what, 6 players on that team. I mean, just as a comparison, before the Panthers left for for Finland, I was able to talk to Koistinen. He's the only Finnish player on the Panthers and one of just two that played over in Helsinki. And I think he was saying that, you know, the amount of tickets, it was like 60 to 80 tickets. Yeah. That's just for one guy. I can't imagine, you know, in Sweden with six Swedes playing there. I mean, let's face it, they were the home team. You know, but that had to have been a distraction for the people that, you know, probably wanted to see these guys, just, you know, the friends that they were catching up with. I mean.
And would you be surprised if Matt Sundin organized a poker tournament for them?
No, right. but I did.
I'm sure he did.
But I did see that, I don't know if I messaged you, Greg, that Marcus Naslund was.
Yes, you did.
So I just kind of laughed because, you know, here it's, you know, even over there, it's the NHL or former NHLers taken in games. So
right.
It's, you know, it had to have been a huge distraction, and, you know, it's not something I think Detroit needs to hit the panic button yet, but, you know, you never know where those
two games
are going to matter. And especially with them being a division rival and the division being a lot, you know, tougher, I think. So
yeah, two losses. I mean, how many games did Detroit lose last year? Really, they lost probably about 17, 18 games all season last year. So.
Yeah, so in that light, in that perspective, it could play out. But obviously, you know, we're not writing them off just yet.
No.
All right, so now let's go to the Northwest Division, have that same kind of conversation. Colorado and Vancouver probably flip-flopping where people think they will be towards the end of the season, with Colorado on top right now, going 2-0, Vancouver 0-2. Anything with these two teams aiding to their successes or leading to their demise?
Well, you know, I think that the more interesting story from that division right now is the start of the Calgary Flames.
Calgary Flames also 2-0, yep.
Yeah, they beat Vancouver in the home opener. I think that a game they started off really well in that opener, and then they kind of let Vancouver back into it.
Yes,
and then they beat Edmonton, and we'll talk about that later. But the thing is, what I'm interested in Calgary this year is looking at their power play. It's much more effective, and that was a real problem for them last year. Their offense in general was kind of mediocre. But
they scored goals. They're scoring goals so far this year.
Scoring goal, and the guy who's absolutely been very interesting is this guy Mark
Giordano.
Yeah, he's kind of a journeyman defenseman. He was the sixth defenseman last year, and he hurt his shoulder. They shut him down in February. He's a little guy, but he was doing a real good job quarterbacking that power play in the first two games, like dancing around at the points, setting up plays. I think he scored a goal, and he certainly assisted on one in the first game. And the power play just seems a little crisper than it was. So
sure.
That's a good thing because, you know, that kind of team, they have the players up front. They have the defense. I mean, you have Bomeister, Regier, and Phaneuf as your top three. That's a pretty good defense. And Kiprusoff looked pretty sharp in both those games. So, you know, the signs, if you're looking for early signs that you want to see in a team, Calgary has them right now where they should be.
Well, what's Vancouver missing? I mean, obviously
Luongo hasn't played well.
Two games, eight goals again. So, I mean, is it a Luongo case, or are we talking about something with Vancouver's defense?
Well, you know, it's funny because the apologists are already saying in Vancouver, Luongo tends to start slowly in most years. And that his numbers last year, if you look at his first month, he was like 4-5. He had like a save percentage under 9. Goals against average was in, you know, high twos.
Sure.
or maybe even three at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they talk about him having a slow start. He had a lousy finish, obviously, last year. That last game against the Blackhawks was a disaster for him personally. But I think he hasn't been super sharp. I think also they're not getting much offense created up other than the Sedin line. Those guys are actually creating chances, but everybody else, they brought in Samuelson, Kessler, nothing else happened. So, again, it's two games with them. You know, you have to put everything in perspective, but they haven't, you know, the signs you want to see. Like, if you're looking at this weekend saying, you know, we're looking at any given team, this is a sign you want to see to start with. This is not a sign you want to see.
Right,
Vancouver,
exactly.
You're not seeing the signs, whereas Calgary, you are. And Colorado is just, you know, I mean, again, I don't think they have a great team. I don't think they're a playoff team by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, they're starting 2-0. That's still 2-0. It's two wins as opposed to two losses.
Exactly. All right, so it wasn't all sun and roses over the first few games of the season. We've had some significant injuries I'd like to discuss. Let's start off with up in Montreal and Andrei Markov with his injury, and also Ryan O'Byrne going down. So that's two significant blows to the Canadiens. So, Aaron, why don't you take us through at least Montreal's injury woes so far?
Well, I think that obviously to lose Markov for 4 months is going to be brutal. I can't see how. Who's their number two? Spashuk, and then you got Hamrelik. I can't see how those
Georges.
Georges may be able to step up, but I don't know that he's at the point where he can, like, completely fill the shoes of Markov. So, I mean, they're going to definitely need a, you know, offensive defense. I don't know if that's the proper way of putting it. Kind of a by-committee sort of mentality because, Markov was, I think, the key to their power play. And last year they didn't have such a great power play compared to the previous years, and we saw kind of how it caused the team to obviously not do so well. So to have that loss up front is not something or the way you want to start out the season, definitely. O'Byrne, I believe he was the one called up to, or he was the one going to fill in for Markov, at least in the lineup. He wasn't necessarily the actual Markov replacement, but now he's already hurt. And with that, they lose some toughness. So I think Yannick Weber is being brought up. I think he played, one game last year? So, you know, question of whether where he's going to fit in exactly will be yet to be seen. It's a mess. I mean, that's not the way that they want to start out.
No, losing a key player like that, it's like the Patriots losing Tom Brady in the first game. You know, I mean, really, Markov, you know, is their power play quarterback. He's their best defense. He's arguably the best overall player, too. So he's the guy they wanted to be captain.
Yep.
You lose a guy like that, it hurts. But, you know, there's the injuries. And it's amazing how you can get key injuries so early in the season. Carolina lost Eric Cole for up to 6 weeks with a knee injury. You know, you start having players go down. It's tough. It's tough to find replacements. And I think in Montreal's case, their coach Jacques Martin was already talking about, you know, this, as you talk about committee, it's going to be taking three sets of defensemen basically to step up their games and do things. But it's a big blow for the Canadians.
Yeah. And I guess one thing that, I mean, not that you can say, oh, there's much benefit to losing a player like Markov so early, but I guess in this sense, you really see what your squad's made of.
Want that.
No, you don't want it, but at least, you know,
because
but you're going to
4 months from now, maybe too late to make up the ground.
This is true. But with but you know what, with the way that the finishes have been the past couple of years, is sometimes you can't count a team out. I mean,
no, of course.
Look at like St. Louis last year. So
well, what about the Devils?
Well,
right,
yeah.
Brodeur goes
yeah,
down.
That's right. True. Yeah,
you know, and they
the Flyers
certainly
every
saw
year.
What they had, and wound up. You know, in excellent shape. So
yeah.
I think part of the issue is, you know, they're talking 4 months for Markov, and that's a best case
scenario.
That's
talk. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. A serious injury. You know. So, look, I mean, you know, the thing is, the bright side for the Canadians is they won their first two games.
Right.
So,
exactly.
So that's
back to our first two games theory. It's better to have won those first two games than to have lost those first
but
two games.
They didn't beat the greatest teams in the Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres. And Carey Price, who's under a lot of pressure in his own right, had to face 81 shots in two games, which, again, doesn't, you know, if you're getting 81 shots from teams that are middling offensive forces like Toronto and Buffalo, what happens when you start playing the Washingtons and the Bostons and the Philadelphias, the teams that really, Pittsburgh's that put the puck on the net a lot and create a lot of pressure. So.
All right, so that pretty much wraps up the Montreal Canadiens injury situation. We'll have to keep our eye on Markov, his potential return as the season moves along, and to see what it does to the Canadiens as we go. Right now, I'd like to move and talk about a new feature that we've got on CBSSports.com. It'll be coming out in the next couple days.
Yeah, either
today or tomorrow or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Basically, Aaron did a lot of legwork and tracked down the current NHL rosters as of opening day and did some research into nationalities of the players within an organization, heights, weights.
Everything,
exactly.
Everything you can get from a roster at the very least.
Right. And put some interesting stuff together along with Roland Lewag, who did some great imagery to go along with it. So, Aaron, I'm going to turn it back to you and let you explain it just a little bit more.
Okay. Well, basically, you know, Greg, you explained it pretty well.
Sorry about that.
Just a few things to note here. We took the rosters that were published on September 30th. That was the last day for NHL teams to get their final rosters in, to get under the cap, that sort of thing. So we took those rosters. Some of the rosters have players on injured reserve. Some players have fewer than 23 because of cap issues. I believe that would be the New York Rangers.
Yes, it would be. No, that had nothing to do with the cap. It was purely a choice.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
And the cap.
So, yeah, we took those rosters and we just, you know, broke them down in all sorts of possible ways, whether it be, you know, nationality, what states, if they're American, they came
from.
What provinces, you know, tallest players, shortest players, the heaviest players, just, again, everything you can think of. And Roland, who is our graphic artist, he is putting it together. And so, but in the meantime, we're going to pepper Wes with some questions as to whether he can guess some of the oldest, youngest, you know, most Canadian. So, I guess we'll start with the youngest. Care to take a guess?
The youngest team right now, I would say, would be the Los Angeles Kings.
No.
Of the four countries, though, you're in the correct country.
Okay. Well,
there are only two. Come on, there are only two countries. We're back to two countries.
It's not the Kings, huh?
Not the Kings.
That's a good question. Then Phoenix?
No.
All right.
Well. Okay. Well, that's it. We'll do two. It's too bad we don't have a buzzer. Chicago.
Chicago.
The youngest at 26.
Really?
26 years. An average of 26 years.
Okay.
Okay. So oldest.
The oldest team. I guess off the top of my head, I would think the Red Wings.
No.
But it wouldn't be the Red Wings.
some of these are very surprising.
Off the top
so.
Of my head, I said the Red Wings. I would think then.
This one, actually, I don't remember who it was.
If it's not the Red Wings.
You got the right color of the jersey.
Okay, the Flames.
No.
No.
Okay.
How many teams wear red?
Carolina.
Carolina is the oldest team in the league?
30 years, 6 months.
Wow.
Surprisingly.
Mr. Brindamore, it's time to sit down.
Yes, he's definitely carrying that over.
And as far as nationality, we'll go with
most Canadian
for you.
All right, I think we should make these multiple choice moving forward. But
okay, well, I'll give you.
Edmonton. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I didn't want to give him multiple choices. This is the one I figured he should
Edmonton,
get. And he did, of course.
Because, you know, if you're not from Canada, who's going to play there?
That is
That's
almost
exactly
word
what
for word
said.
What I said when I.
Exactly.
Sorry, Edmonton.
Yes. We love you. Yes. If we could play there, trust me, we would.
I don't know about that.
No. We're not looking for votes
warm
here.
Warm weather climate. Adapted. Okay, and as far as the least Canadian.
The least Canadian team.
And I'll give you a hint on this. They're also the least I'm sorry, no. They're not the least. Okay. No. Just
the least Canadian team. I would think Atlanta.
No.
Okay. Let's see. Rangers?
Yes.
And yeah, right. Tortorella and all.
Well, the interesting thing about this, I think I pointed this out to Greg, is they are the most balanced of all the teams. They have equal parts Canadian, American, and European.
Of course, lumping Europe into one
giant thing. Yes, yes.
Which is why they can never get the right to gel.
Well, Aaron took the other tack and said it's the true melting pot.
The true melting pot, okay, New York City, so the New York Rangers. And then finally, do you care to guess which?
No.
Oh, come on.
I'm tired of guessing.
Right.
There's nothing
He's
on the line
over
here.
There.
We don't have any bets going. Come on. The three U.S. states that have turned out the most NHLers.
Currently
on a roster.
Massachusetts.
Not one of them.
Nope.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That was Michigan.
Michigan is one.
Correct. Minnesota.
Correct.
And, okay, so if it's not Massachusetts, New York.
Yes.
Like New York State, yeah, there's a lot of players from New York up in
Yeah.
I did. That was the same three, I guess.
Massachusetts, huh? Like that. Wow.
New York, let me just go down here. Minnesota has the most at 25. Michigan comes in second at 24. Followed by New York at 21, and Massachusetts, I believe, comes in fourth, and they have 14.
That's it. Huh?
That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is not your father's Massachusetts.
No.
Well, I guess a lot of the players who go through Boston College and Boston U aren't necessarily Massachusetts natives. Yeah. Other places too, because they seem those schools turn out a lot of players.
Yeah, they're a lot of them are from New York.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So I got zero, right?
Yeah. No, Edmonton. No.
Oh, I got Edmonton.
You got
there
Edmonton.
You go. Okay, thank you.
And with style.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So well done. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for our first regular season edition of the Odd Man Rush. I'd like to thank Aaron Brown and Wes Goldstein. This is Greg Smoluka saying we'll see you next week.